Jones, he married Mabel, a wise old owl was he. He told his wife he never drank a stronger thing than tea. But after honeymooning, at night he stayed away. And for a week he never got home till the break of day. At last poor Mabel asked the reason why. Said Jones, I'm going to tell the truth or die. Baby dear, listen.
Hello and
here,
welcome back to our
I'm
podcast. Fanfic Sandfic, that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I'm hesitant to respond to your address, for there is no mere civilian present. You are the presence of Lieutenant Weirdington, Esquire.
That's pretty good.
Of His Majesty's Royal Arms. His Majesty being one Weirdington, Esquire.
God, I keep forgetting that this is the thing you're doing with the new book. Just like I keep doing the Road to Thunderhead. 2020.
By the way, welcome to the Road to Thunderhead 2020. You paid for the whole seat, but you'll probably need the one next to it.
And the
entire recline of the...
You're just gonna sink into your seat out of boredom. That's pretty good. Okay. Hi, folks. We're back again. Episode 45, chapter 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so last week we came into a new book. Having discovered that we misunderstood the consequences of the evil spell, we thought that it ripped her soul apart. It just fired her out of her body like an ejector seat, which gave some hope that, okay, like, this curse was made by an idiot. Maybe she's just astral projecting back into the orb space. She has once again merged with the orb force. And among the orb force, there is only exposition.
Yes.
We're exposited that, like... It's weird. It doesn't even, like, give us the mystery of what's happening to the souls. Is there, like, sucked... Like, the souls of everybody who's dying recently is being sucked into a vortex near the foot. Near the city center of Goosestepsburg. But yeah, no, they're getting caught in some sort of magic net where they're just sort of hanging out, being bored, compressed into a ball of souls somewhere in the middle of the city center.
A soul NATO, if you will.
But BJ isn't, I guess, is far enough away that she's not at risk of getting sucked in to the corona, even though, like, she's close enough to observe it. I don't know. She's just too strong spiritually, I guess. And then her murderer talks to her about it for a while. But there's no, like, it occurs to me now that, like, it's weird that there's no recrimination there, that, like, BJ's ghost didn't try to murder, like, her murderer's ghost.
With what?
The fact that she was murdered. Hate? I don't know how ghosts fight.
She's gonna ghost murder him.
At least try. At least insult him. Like, at least shit on him a little. Like, they're able to converse, therefore she should be able to at least insult him. Disparage his parentage. Something. Anything. This dude murdered you. Like, you've done worse to people who've done less. Fuck. But it turns out to be fine. She's brought back to life by a necromantic ritual conducted in part by the other idiot and the horse who would be Satan. And it's apparently described as incredibly uncomfortable and extremely violating, but, you know, it's fine. It's otherwise fine. She's just back to life. No consequences. No, like, there could be, like, lasting implications to this. Like, just an unending hurt, a numbness. Like, you could like, call back to any number of fiction, fantasy, fantastical.
Well, I mean, there is a consequence that's just completely pointless, because she, like, is now effectively immortal. She now is ageless, like the like Snips and Snails were. So, like, she will never die unless something can, like,
yeah,
terminate
her. all benefits, but there's no, like, numbness, there's no, like, call to the grave. Oh, we haven't heard from, like, Clippy the horse in a while. Anyway. But yeah, nothing significant. No, like, no, didn't hurt. Like, it is, sure. And then we're back in, Meat Locker, which, you know, was bathed in nuclear fire, but it's fine.
Because that didn't actually happen.
Because nothing actually happens. And then we solve the murder mystery that, like, there was no reason to be invested in. And it's fine. And does something happen between that and coming back home to, like, it's an okay visual gag, but you said that it's, like, tries to frame it as, like, a sad moment, wherein, darling, I'm back! Darling, you're back! Shoujo sparkles and, them running together, and then German, haymaker, like, German suplex. Like, that's a standard sort of toon gag format, is the, like...
Yeah.
Lovers running together, and then at the point of, like, hugging, a fist extends.
It's just extremely funny to imagine horses doing a German suplex. It's so good.
I'm having flashbacks to, like, trying to read this shit, and, like, reading it as, like reading it as, like, an awkwardly described, Horace Bronson kicks. Kicks the shit, kicks Blackjack crazy hard, and sends her flying through the goalpost, and you inform me that no, the clear intended reading of the text from, like, a brony cultural standpoint is that Horace Bronson picked her up with his forehooves and
judo threw her. Judo threw her.
Hurts to this day, but it's fine. Story's fine. The world in which we live in is fine. What did any other fine thing happen?
There was like a side plot about, like, BJ getting her limbs repaired by Rover and that being, like, a whole thing, but it's really nothing.
Yeah,
it's more trade will save the waste and how, like, Riverside is doing fine even though
Fucking goddamn it, son of a bitch! Now, okay. Oh. I'm very sick, and I had some vain hope that, like, I'd get angry enough that it would clear my sinuses, and I am certainly pretty angry, but it's just, like, another, like, weight on, like, the, like, kind of ephemeral goo that, like, is, like, pressing down on every part of my being right now. Trade will save the waste. Cool. I'm glad you remembered that fucking catchphrase, Somber. Would have been neat if that occurred to you, like, when, like, the central trade pub you introduced at the beginning of your fucking story, like, would have embodied that on any level. Like,
or, like, it mattered at all?
Like, hey, Somber, why will trade save the waste? Well, encourages cooperation. Oh, like, cooperate, okay, like, so, sort of, like, community defense of, like, a mutually important, like, resource, like, a, like, strategic, what you call it, trading ground? Like, might, maybe, but, yeah, no, no, instead, Riverside is a bastion of, pure libertarian independence. Like, it is strong through trade, and yet trade doesn't seem to, like, give it that strength through community with its trade partners. Instead, it gains it's strong and durable because it just siphons resources out of other areas by virtue of winning debates. I don't know.
Well, they have food. That's their big thing. They have, well, no, they don't have food anymore. They have metal. Like, they have, it's like, I don't want to go too hard into this because a lot of it's headcanoning and like theory crafting, but like, I don't understand what Riverside has to offer. The other two factions need, because
yeah, it's Riverside not like doesn't have, has a manufacturing base. Like, well, what are you going to do with raw metal?
Well, that's the thing. Is like, that's the big thing with this shitty story. A big element of the economics of the setting is that no one has food. We never experience that sense of famine in the story because Summer's a bad writer. There's no food. There's the only people who produce reasonable food are the Enclave and the society, and people like, and that allows people, like, that's why the society is forgiven for its slavery, and the Enclave is like managed because they need their food. And like, Riverside used to provide fish for people, but like, the fishing dried up because it always does, and now they've switched over to selling like metal and like scrap and resources that they're pilfering into the nearby metro stations.
So you'd think that Somber is like long since shit on the like organism of like the murderous pastel horse society he's like painted. Like there's an organism, there's a character here that it's being ignored. And like a while back, I pointed out that like he's described an apartment with like six roommates in it, all of whom never interact with each other, who like barely even know each other's names. You could paint a pretty interesting like place here in that, like, okay, the society is indispensable because they have everybody's food. The finders are indispensable because they've got the mart, and the mart is indispensable for distributing that food. And so, like, the society would be useless without the mart, and the mart would be useless without the society, and like everything else like trickles out from that. Like, so like if the society has arms and armies, which they almost certainly do in the like hellscape that the setting is depicted as, like, of course they do, because they need to, like, one, keep down their slaves, and two, keep other people from stealing the food, and also potentially the slaves,
stealing their one primary resource. Yeah,
and so like it's insane that a dozen out of towners would like come and stomp the Mega Mart, and there wouldn't be an immediate retaliation from, at minimum, the society who needs the Mega Mart, like, as a free and open point of exchange to, like, get their food out so that they can retain their political capital and their control over everyone else that in turn goes to the Mega Mart.
The only possible argument I can make for it isn't even really, like, an argument for it, but more another different failing of the story, is that, like, all of the faction leaders in the story are fucking terrible at running their own factions. Because they all have their own weird insular problems that are, like, there's a lot of internal affairs problems that are happening with every single one of them that makes them, like, they should have collapsed in a week, but they're propped up by just, like, the fact that the story is bad. Like, the finders are in a weird, self-inflicted, like, civil war because they're trying to decide who's going to become the next heir. The fucking
in their libertarian meritocracy. They have to choose an heir between the previous leader's two adult children, large adult daughters.
but they society is weird and like basically it's not even really a faction. It's just a bunch of people who all like inhabit the same building at the same time. The Reapers are a complete joke. There's no
there's a lot of tea been spilt on the Reapers.
Just to touch on one
the rest
one
of the podcast
is just that like the Reapers are make literally no sense how they function at all. Same problem with the Rangers. Like the Rangers apparently were like a day away from a military coup at any moment. And like I don't know, like the society is currently dealing with its own shit because like their king is dying, so like they're also in a political strife situation. So like how have any of these factions haven't collapsed up to this point is completely baffling. But yeah, so like it makes sense that Trey doesn't make any sense of this setting because nothing makes any sense about these factions. They're all nonsense and garbage.
You know what might do it? Sharing.
Yeah.
because it's caring.
You gotta share. You gotta care.
Fundamentally, like I said it before, but I don't.
That song was about fucking imperialism, apologism.
I don't think I properly articulated myself the last time I said it, but like, trade is innately hostile. Trade is something that happens when like, two people like connected enough to like, just share. If trade implies a necessity for tit for tat, if you're strictly in trade relations, then there exists the possibility that a fight might start to just start taking the thing.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get too much longer into this, but I do want to say that like this is a story about scarcity. Like it is in a wasteland, so some of this does make a certain amount of logistical sense, and that like there's at least an attempt at framing the idea that these people are wrong because BJ has to show them the error of their ways. But BJ is also a terrible example, so yeah, a lot of that like, falls flat.
So, like, to in defense of like the idea that trade will save the way, like it's almost valid, but it's like the first step. Like trade brings about peace generally because it leads to a state of shit. Like when you are interdependent on somebody for trade, then your interests align. Like then you have like then you are invested in each other. The hierarchy is from feuding to trade to alliance. I don't know, the phrase trade will save the waste, especially in light of everything else that happens in the story and every other political idea shouted, is that like that's the implication strikes me that like Somber seems to think that that's where it can and should and ought to stop.
That everything's total libertarian market, perfect and ideal and utopic. Yeah, I think we gotta kind of have to move
all
on.
Right, anyway,
episode,
yeah.
Though.
I've been slightly spoiled for like some of the content for this coming episode, and
yeah,
I'm not looking forward to it. So
yeah, as someone who read it, I'm not looking forward to it either.
So a lot of words spilled over. The phrase "trade will save the waste" is back.
It's something that just really sticks in both of our craws because it's just like, huh, that's a really weird phrase in context of the rest of the story. It's like you don't get what your story is about, and it kind of sticks with me. But anyways, yeah, we're on to chapter 50. Chapter 50: Selfishness. So, as I've taken to, I've decided to name this episode the Let's All Gaslight Glory episode, because, yeah, so, we start back up again right from the moment from before, where, Glory suplexes BJ, and calls her a cunt, because, you know, that's the kind of story this is now, and, like, is yelling at her, and there is, like, kind of an admitted, like character comedy of, like, the moment, like, the next moment is her, like, panicking and being like, oh no, are you alright? But also, like, angry at her and kind of beating the shit out of her at the same time. Like, there's a very, like, comedic confliction of of like, oh, I'm not supposed to do any harm, but I want to hurt you because you're awful, that I thought was kind of funny. But this whole scene is awful and stupid for a bunch of reasons. The scene is Glory like beating up Blackjack for cheating on her, and Blackjack being like, I don't understand what you're talking about. What's cheating? What's monogamy, basically, like, because she comes from a polyamorous rape stable, so, like, she doesn't understand the concept of, like, monogamous relationships as far as sex goes, because she's, like...
I mean, to be fair, like, I'm trying to think back, and I don't know when she would have ever, like, seen one. Like, I think
there,
like, people
there
would,
are
like,
examples
under
of
the
it,
assumption
though.
Of it, but, like...
But there are examples of it, though, in earlier scenes. Like, I can't think of the exact example, but I know that there are instances where Blackjack, this has come before of a criticism of the writing, is that, like, Blackjack is only from a, like, free love society when it's convenient, and she forgets that and acts in really monogamous ways in other instances.
All right.
Like, she's perfectly capable of understanding the idea of, like, little, like Big Mac and Twilight Sparkle's like monogamous relationship and not thinking it's weird, but like then later on not getting it in the sequence. But this whole sequence is really shitty anyways, because she's like beating her up and she's like, how could you do this to me? And then like the rest of the stable kids all show up and are just like, they just like calm her down basically by gaslighting her and telling her it's not a big deal, because like Scotch shows up and she's like, well, how often have you had sex, Blackjack, with like just random people in the stable? And she like rattles off like people and stuff, and like just trying to like, oh, that's just a thing that we do, it's not a big deal, you don't have to worry about it, like, and like I can almost grok what they're trying to come at with this, but the problem is just it's so badly framed that it just feels really disrespectful of specifically Glory's feelings, and you know, she's not a real person, but whatever.
Of course we have to pretend to, because otherwise like why are we like
even here? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a story, and so like a story needs to have like some sort of internal logic, and like within the logic of the story, Glory is a person with certain expectations for the people in her life, and I don't know. Like I think that the main thing I'm frustrated with right now is that it just further feeds my assurance that fucking Somper doesn't know his own characters, like doesn't have like an internal map of like these people's inner lives, like he just doesn't know who they are. I think henceforth the mystery to me is like trying to figure out like what Somper is thinking about, what he's doing with this project, what is he trying to like do. Like, he's very interested in lore. That much seems obvious. Like, he wants to talk a lot about his ideas about the setting. And he wants to, like, see a lot of dead pastel horses. Like, he wants to see a lot of, killing. Like, I think, I don't know, he's looking, I think he's, like, transitioning between a bunch of exposition set piece and, like, moods. Like, there's like, I don't know, it hasn't crystallized in my mind, but, like, I at this point, my current hypothesis is that, like, he wants to talk about his lore ideas, which is, like, a sort of universal nerdy instinct. Like, it's a bad instinct for somebody who wants to be a writer. It's like, the number one thing that, like, we kind of talk about on Fi's server as like things for new writers to avoid if possible.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to give a shit about your lore, like when we don't know who your characters are. Like,
yeah, when you have no context for like why this matters.
Like, he's got lore and set pieces that he wants to like transition between. And all of this plot is like kind of feels like an inconvenience. He feels obliged to like get out of the way because people in his comments keep talking about it, like asking about it. So,
well, yeah, like that, I think that does make a certain amount of sense, because like there's no real, like there's no drive to actually like complete the story. And like, I don't know, I've been told on multiple occasions that apparently the story was never supposed to end. it was just supposed to spin out into infinity. And, like, I don't believe that, like, anyone has that, like endurance. But, like, at least if you're planning from the perspective that I'm never really intending to end this, then something like plot really goes out the window, and it just becomes, like, how many details of ideas can I fit in? Like, how many set pieces of cool things I think can happen, or, like, dramatic things can happen, coupled with more and more, like, because this story eventually just kind of, like, breaks the number one rule of fanfiction of, like, don't... Or not, like, I guess, like, a number one unspoken rule about fanfiction, which is, like, don't try to overtake the story you're doing a fanfiction of, because no one likes that. That's a simple factoid of things. When you constantly refer to how the real characters aren't as cool as your special main characters are, that's bad writing. it's a specific affliction of fanfiction.
That is the Phi has trouble with the term Mary Sue because it has been broken and abused, but the to my mind, the true etymological definition comes from its source point, which is a old 70, like one of the first known recorded instances of fanfic, a Star Trek fanfic, wherein the character of Lieutenant Mary, or like Ensign Mary Sue.
I think we're getting a little too
deep. No, like I want to bring it up, like, so the thing about Ensign Mary Sue is that the plot broke around her, and she became the most important person on the Enterprise, is the thing that makes a Mary Sue. And so, like, what you're describing is the pivotal, like, the core failing, the, like, one thing not to do, is in essence to make the truest manifestation of a Mary Sue. When you start describing how your idea in somebody else's setting is so much better than everything else in that draws people to that setting, is where you have gone truly off the rails.
Yeah, it's just you vomiting your ego into the story. But I think we should get slightly back on track.
Rails. What happens next?
Glory beats on BJ. The kids calm her down by basically, like, telling us a lie, because, like, we're like a plot inconsistency that I really stuck out like a sore thumb to me. Blackjack, throughout a huge chunk of the story, is, like, painted as being extremely virginal. Like, she had no interpersonal relationships when she was in the stable, and presumably didn't have much sex because of the way she talks in the first couple of chapters. And that's double backed up with having multiple partners who, like, make fun of her for her, like, sexual inadequacies and shit. And then we're told that, no, she actually had a ton of casual sex with a bunch of people, including Scotch Tape's mother, which is a weird detail. That doesn't, like, it's just one of those, like, it's a you can't go back and change things thing, but it, like...
No, I don't think it's as... It's so inconsistent that it's part of a consistency. It's like, back to, like, everything we were babbling about just a second ago, like, this story doesn't contain characters, it contains images,
set pieces.
Contains thumbnails of characters that interact with set pieces. And so, consistently, Blackjack throughout the entire story has been whore and or Madonna, depending upon the needs of the scene. And the needs of the scene currently is that she is whore. So she is. It just depends on context. There's no inconsistency. All is darkness. All is changing.
But whatever, it gets Glory to calm down, and that's a whole deal. A lot of this chapter is them just, like, reconciling between their differences. Glory is, like, admits that she has, like, pretty severe abandonment issues, which are pretty legitimate in my opinion, since her mother left her and her family, like, has completely left her for dead, and she's completely isolated from her people, and now she's Rainbow Dash. So even if she went back, she'd be killed on sight. And so that, like, she's sort of interpreted this as Blackjack bailing on the relationship in the worst possible way. And since this chapter really hammers home that her her radio confession of how great Stygius was in bed was heard by the entire wasteland. So, like, Glory is so dragged through the mud in this that I don't understand why. But, like, it has this weird problem where, like, it tries to acknowledge that, yeah, she has abandonment issues. But also, like, doesn't really, like, still kind of has problems in trying to, like, project how this is a really bad interpretation of polyamory. And that, like, Blackjack isn't that stupid. It is feels really weird. But yeah, like you said, there's no internal, like, these characters are hollowed out shells. There's a lot of them dealing with this. We cut to a scene with, because a weird recurring scene is that whenever Blackjack breaks up with Glory, there's usually a weird scene where they reconcile over cleaning for some reason. And I don't know if that's intended to be, like, an actual, like, I don't know what you call it, but, like, a recurring theme between the two of them or not. But there is a, I messed up the scenes a little bit. There's a bit where they bond over the sense of, like, essentially body dysmorphia. Because, you know, Glory is like, I don't even feel like I'm the same person anymore. And they discuss about the idea of, like, how much of you is you. Not everything is different about you since she's Rainbow Dash. And, you know, Blackjack can relate because she's mostly a robot now. She's mostly a robot zombie. Like, she's literally a cyber zombie at this point. But yeah, then we get told that the actual plan for this chapter is that they're not gonna do anything really for this chapter, and this is like, because Blackjack's like, I just basically got a lot of people killed over my own, like, obsessive need to, like, finish this puzzle, and I need to chill. So they're just gonna sit on their hands, or I guess their hooves, in this circumstance, and just kind of, like, hang out and deal with personal problems.
Oh, great.
Yay!
It's another one of these. You can't. I wish he had an author in his life while he was, like, doing this. Anybody, at least somebody in his comments to, like, say, you can do both! You can do.
No, clearly you can't.
You could, like, you should, like, Geez, which YouTube channel was it? There's a recommendation that ought to need to have for the audience right now. The other day I watched a YouTube video, one of many hundreds of thousands, about Rise of the Skywalker, but unlike it was actually sort of from an actual filmmaker sort of perspective, talking about how, like, JJ does scenes, but he doesn't. And plot, but no story. And the latest Star Wars movie is, like, endemic of all of J.J. Abrams' like worst impulses. In that, like, plot happens really fast. Like, plot happens all over the place, but no scenes happen. Like, nobody actually, like people interact with each other insofar as they yell at each other about, like, the next thing they have to go run and get, and then yelling about all the danger around them as they run and get the thing, and then they yell about the next thing they have to get, but they don't talk about, like, each other, or their relationship to the thing, or, and so that's kind of, like, yeah, but this is the worst of all worlds, because, like, he like, takes a chapter to, like, do a bunch of plot, wherein things happen, and they yell about, like, the things that they're doing, and the thing, like, the next thing they have to do.
All the plans they have for what's gonna happen next.
And then all the running around stops, and then they, like, and then we do a scene where they talk to each other, but, terrifyingly, like, the scenes have no plot. we plot and scenes are in two different ghettos, and, like, never the twain meet, because, like, the scenes have no, like, guts, have no strength to them, have no, like, internal quality, because they're unrelated to any story.
Yeah, but sadly we still have to keep moving through them. There's a really weird, pointless B-plot in this entire chapter about how Scotch is, like, basically trying to, like, be an engineer, and she's, like, trying to help the town get fixed up with Chapel. and she's like yelling, like she basically is like, here's some plans I have, and like basically the Crusaders just like threw her out in her ass and told her like, we don't want it. And it's just a dumb weird side plot that'll culminate in something later. But Scotch is like, I'm trying to like help them and they don't want to help me, and that sucks. They find a pamphlet from the past in their, because they're like, almost this entire chapter takes place in the house they have, because they have a house, right? Like that's something from a long time ago. They just, that's near chapel, that they just like, they just hang out in this house for the most of the chapter. But they're like doing some cleaning of the house because it was a house that was owned by Marigold, who was the surrogate mother, Blackjack's like ancestor essentially. And they find like some pamphlets for surrogacy spells, like the idea of like, you know.
Wait a minute, where are they again? Right,
they're
now?
In their house. They're in their house,
which is in the chapel.
It's near chapel. It's like a stone's throw away from chapel. Ugh, man, I hate this. But they BJ finds a bunch of like pamphlets on surrogacy spells, which are just spells a way to like put a baby into another person so that they can carry the baby. Because this was, like, related to Marigold or whatever.
Who's Bruce Wayne, and why would I turn somebody's sperm into his? I don't...
like that. Then she gets the idea of, like, oh, like, I'm tangentially related to Marigold. I want to find out more about them. So, like, she finds a bunch of boxes, and there's, like, this weird moment where she's like, I want to fix things with glory, even though I know I can't, and I need some answers. And she does like the pray to God moment, and she like asks the dealer, and instead of the dealer, we get a memory orb that falls out of a box to answer her prayers.
I thought we were done with these.
Nope, apparently not.
Beamed by yet another memory. Oh, nostalgia. Back to the, I don't know, maybe now that she's dead, maybe she can't like, now that she is an unholy ghoul, sure, her connection to the orb force is severed.
Nope.
Except that, oh wait, one thing we forgot in the recap, it turns out that, like, what I had been presuming was any number of things that made sense based on the metaphysics of the world that we'd established was the reasons for these like, weird hallucinations and flashbacks, was in fact a glitch caused by the surveillance system that's been in back engineered into, like, backdoored into her brain.
Yes.
That, like, she is a broadcast tower with apparently unlimited range.
Sure. Apparently.
And even a seasoned engineer can't just, like, put a tape over the, like, transmitter? Like,
well, it's connected to her eyeballs. Like, her eyeballs are cameras now, so...
Well, yeah, no, like, that's fine. The like, what I'm saying is that Somber figured out how to insist that the recording and transmission system can't be removed. But there's all sorts of ways that you can break a system. Like
yeah,
all
I know, you have to but do whatever, is, like, it's hardwired in and we can't fix it. That's the thing that's established by it.
And it literally, like, the only way Somber can have what he wants is that BJ's brain isn't actually here. It's still in a tank under Zordon's palace. Then and they can't break the broadcast, the sender receiver, because otherwise BJ, like, falls over. Like, that's the, like, you need a Kate Sith kind of scenario in order for, like, this to make any sense. Otherwise,
well, I mean,
like,
it also
just
makes...
break the part that transmits outward. Like, she
can, I don't know. I think
day,
it still makes sense if it's just, like, no, it's hardwired into your eyes and ears, and you can't... Like, if you turn those off, your eyes and ears go with it. I think that's a fine thing to establish. It's still bullshit because it's just, like, nothing... It's setting up for a plot detail that won't matter for chapters, and it's almost utterly irrelevant to the story anyways. This dumb surveillance thing. But I don't think it's too ridiculous to say that it just can't be done. Regardless, we gotta get on this memory orb. We're like 40 minutes
in. I really wanna insist on this, because I wanna try and be clear. So, like, it's impossible for a device to be truly holistic. What I'm saying is that, okay, you've got a she, like, her eyes are cameras, and then those lead to a thing that, like, transmit those images besides her brain, to a signal transmitter that transmits somewhere else. You can leave the entire part of the device intact and just break the antenna.
Oh, well, I'm just telling you, like, it can't be done for whatever reason. In this
I know. I get that. It's just that it's dumb.
Like, yeah, of course. It's a mystery box. It's just there to be like, why is she being surveilled? Like, who would have a reason to surveil her every action?
Also, it brings up to mind, like, this Blackjack is looking for, like, forgiveness to get back in Rainbow Dash's pants, but doesn't, like, think to be a considerate enough lover to, like, inform her that, oh, by the way, I will have to be blindfolded. Actually, in fact, like, you should be aware that somewhere there exists porn of you, because I'm bugged. Like, I'm wired.
Yeah. God. Anyways, you gotta get on this memory orb shit. Oh man. So, as far as I can understand, because this scene is very confusing, it's Marigold spying on a couple of the Ministry mayors of Rainbow Dash, Pinkie Pie, and I think maybe one else. I don't remember. But it's a bunch of dumb bullshit. It's talking about stuff that happened in the lore of the original story and how this story, like, overrides a bunch of it. Some of it just really, like, really is alarming. Like, I was talking about this with a friend on the server, because we're kind of, like, reading it at the same time, which I implicitly told them not to do, but they're doing it anyways.
Explicitly. Anyway, so
we are told a bunch of shit about the OIA that is just frustrating and infuriating. One of them is that, like, apparently, like, so a thing that is not true but is set by this story is that, like, oh, we had mega spells before we even needed them for some reason. Like, we just had the technology there. It was already invented, ready to go, and that's weird. And that's just, like, wrong. Like, the mega spells were, like, invented as a response to the escalation of war and weren't just something that was just, like, whole cloth invented by the OIA for when they needed them. That's just total bullshit. But we're also told that despite the OIA being a bunch of pencil pushers that everyone just thinks is, like, an inner affairs office that doesn't do anything, apparently that inner affairs office also launches satellites on a regular basis. Because apparently they have spy, like, satellites now in this setting, which also is just not true. And there's also, like, a really, really frustrating detail that really bothers me, because every time Golden Blood comes up, he's the worst. But there's a bit where they're like, okay, well, we need to know what's going on with the OIA. We need to get a spy in. And they just all shake their heads and go, well, that doesn't work, because all of the OIA members are uber loyal to Golden Blood directly for some reason and will never, like, betray him. And it, which is just the most, like, like, yeah, I'm like, we were talking about earlier, I'm hesitant to use the term Mary Sue, but, like, this just feels like a bullshit, like, thing to say about a character. It's just like, well, yeah. There's no way you can get anyone to spy on Golden Blood. He's just that charismatic. It's like, he's a shambling corpse. What part of that is charismatic?
I don't know. You could have something interesting there, but instead, again, darker. like, I think the funniest thing about this whole fucking thing is how, like, seriously Somber takes his shit. Whiffs his own farts. And yet, like, over how dark this is, and yet at every turn, the dumbest things are the biggest cop-outs. are the weakest shit. Was it last week or in the server that? Oh no, it was just in the server. It came up in conversation that you complimented me by saying, like, in your experience, for most people, if you stare into the void stares back. But I, Weirdington, simply critique it for, like.
I've seen more gaping void.
But, like, you could have a really interesting dark story of, like, this panel of government officials, like, looking at each other and, like, solemnly noting, so we've hired a internal affairs chief, and he has formed a cult at the center of our administration. there is a terrifying, like, blood cult devoted to this son of a bitch, who, like, has all of our numbers.
And he did this without any of us noticing. We are the dumbest.
And that is a thing that is sufficiently Coen Brothers dumb that I can see happening on historically. Like that.
Yeah, I think it's because Golden Blood is so insufferable that the scene isn't really that compelling. You're like, yeah, you're right. It could be like scary that they have this bad guy who just like, oh, I made the CIA, and also like we've been running like fucking like insurgent fucking shit for a while now, and like I just like fucked over like all of South America because
but no, moreover, like take seriously the like his people are ultra loyal to him, but instead of like it just being a wanky like my self-censor is so cool that his people love him, it's a more somber reflection on like this dude, his like HR practices are straight up a cult. Like that like he has the people under him like drink Kool-Aid thinking that it might be filled with arsenic, like on the daily. They're insane.
But yeah, the memory orb is mostly just to like prop up how the OAA is and I guess set up future plot developments, I guess, with the missiles and shit. Also, so yeah, after this, BJ decides to contact Watcher somehow. I think she can just do this now because she has a broadcaster in her head. And there's a really lame scene where she, like, basically just vomits the entire plot of what's happened since she last talked to her. And Watcher's like, and I thought Lil Pip had it bad. And it's just like, come on. If you could do a jerk off motion through the medium of podcast, I would.
We'd be raw. We would need we would have lubed up before
we started today.
One thing I also forgot to mention in the recap is that like fucking Blackjack is now connected to three different Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah, she's being spied on. She's goddess enabled.
And also, she is at one with the orb.
She is pot orb. But yeah, there is admittedly a kind of cool thing here though, where as she's like talking to the Watcher, there's this uncomfortable sense of dread if she's being watched, because like the goddess knows who the Watcher is because the goddess is part Twilight Sparkle, and can't for complicated reasons doesn't remember what the Guardians of Equestria is. But it's like, oh, you two are talking about the things I want. Oh, isn't that interesting? And just kind of like, it's like, oh,
she's ratting out Spike to Zordon, like,
yeah, without like intending to, because she's an idiot. But like,
also, there's no guarantee there will be any consequences for this interaction because the author is also an idiot.
Actually, there is for once.
Okay,
this is the one time. Because she's like, oh, you're going to, like, because she talks about, she like, and Blackjack's like, well, what are you going to do about it? You can't control me. And she's like, well, I don't know about that. And she can, like, kind of finagle her a little bit now, because she's been in her head for long enough. And she's like, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to be able to wear down your confidence and your ability to resist me. And you're just going to be like a regular vessel. So, you know, enjoy that. And, like, there is this really terrifying moment that's kind of subtle, actually, for Somber for once, where like, I'm talking in a very nonchalant way, but like the goddess yells everything, but whatever. She's kind of like, you know, like, also, like, don't try talking to your friends about this, because I can just stop you from doing that, and also, like, I could just, like, fuck up your ability to do certain things, so, like, you know, don't try to do anything, or I can just wheedle my way out of it. So, like, there's this, like, there's now, like, this kind of, like, cool thing where, like, the goddess can just kind of, like, there's a certain, like, I've talked about this before, but, like, one of the things I find personally terrifying about the goddess is the, like, idea of, like, a dominant force being able to, like, override your own brain and, like, volition and take control of you whenever they want. And while she can't do that quite yet, she can do it just enough that, like, Blackjack can't, like, talk about this problem anymore, because like the goddess could just force her not to, she has that much control over her. And that, like, really, like, that part is particularly uneasy. But there is also a hilarious knock-on effect about this, because the way she describes it, though, where there's, like, oh, also, you're not allowed to kill yourself anymore. And it's, like, which comes across as really, like, it's supposed to be sort of sinister that, like, even you can't even self-terminate to get yourself out of this now. But it's also, like, because Blackjack was already, like, infamously suicidal, it's just like, oh, cool, I also fixed your depression for you. Don't worry about it.
I'm just gonna go in here and tweak the endorphin levels a bit. Like, we're gonna...
There you go.
We're gonna mutate that thyroid to start producing it at manageable levels. Two things. One, how much brain does she have to manipulate left again? Like, I know that I know in my heart this is inevitably going to resolve into a big test of wills. That there's going to be a big but it refused moment wherein, like, Blackjack's, like, libertarian determination will guide her through this vile collectivist's grasp. But if, like, Somber were smart or interesting, this would end with a Mal from the Firefly movie moment of, like, yeah, no, I lost that nerve cluster a long time ago. That, like... You idiot, you're trying to mind control somebody whose brain is only like 30% organic at this point.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. Two, also if Somber were good or interesting, and Horse Satan 2020 were is anywhere near as fleshed out or interesting a character as she could be. There could be, and also if Blackjack were like as a sufficiently well defined character with like notable consistent quirks, there could be a dark unsettling thing where Lacuna starts taking on more and more Blackjack-esque traits.
Oh, because she's dumping all of her, yeah.
If the goddess is trying to like extract Blackjack's free will, where would it go? Well,
well, that's the thing, is it like it's a little up in the air whether or not like free will is one of the things that go into the dumpster. The thing where we're like definitely told is anything that's like negative that the as far as the goddess deems is thrown into the trash heap that is Lacuna. But like it's also important to remember too that like Lacuna also can't do anything about this whole situation either. Like,
yeah, I know, because she's bad. She's
well, it's not that she's bad, and it's not that she's character. Useless. It's no, you got to remember, she's Horse Satan, whatever. But like. She can just go, okay, cool, you're no longer a person anymore. I'm just gonna, like, put this into another box and figure that out. And, like, you just don't exist anymore. Like, that's the thing is, like, Lacuna can always just be disassembled at any moment. And that's, like, part
yeah, no,
of the,
that's,
like...
That's the framing inside the story. And I don't care because I think it's a bad idea. Like, I think... I
don't agree with that. I think that it's... Lacuna, I think it's interesting that Lacuna has a gun to her head at any moment. And she, like, cannot do anything that's completely out of, the goddess's will. So, like, she's had to, for the most of the story, kind of subvert the goddess's will. Partly because, like, she's the only one that has the unique situation of being able to, like... endure enervation enough that it won't kill her, and I think that's fine. If she ever like went back to normal goddess territory, she would just basically cease to be a person because like she's no longer useful. But she's at this point had to like mostly kind of like intentionally take orders the wrong way to be able to, like, keep being, like, friends and helping out Blackjack. But whatever. Regardless, we're fucking not even into, like, halfway through this chapter. This is gonna be a long one.
Let's push forward before I start complaining. Well, garbage men are very well paid because when if they strike, it's immediately...
Yeah, but, like, that's the thing is, like, she can't... Striking requires, like...
I get it. Like, I get the Thermian reasons why, but I don't like them. Anyway.
There's a dumb scene where, like, it looks like BJ and Glory are kind of, like, reconcile over like their differences and try to make up. But then Rampage just shows up and she's like, "Hi, I'm here to push the story along." She basically just like collapses in front of them and bemoans her existence as a gestalt entity, which like I
why okay.
She's like, "Well, it sucks because I'm not a person, and like now, like nothing I've ever done has ever mattered."
Okay, what happens next? I don't. I'm not gonna believe. I can't.
Well, we can talk about it after, after we get through it. But yeah, Rampage bitches and moans about being a gestalt being that's like a bunch of people, and that none of her experiences has ever mattered up to this point. And she's just, it doesn't really come across as like a genuine argument, because it's hard to grok the idea of someone complaining about this, because it's not an experience a real human can have. So it's already, you're already working against it being a kind of confusing idea anyways. But she bemoans herself being like this, and they're basically like, "Well, fine, we're going to try and figure out what actually is going on with you, and if you're actually a real person." And the plan is they're going to like extract memories and see, like, basically, if we extract all the memories of all the people that aren't you, like, is there anything left? And whatever left will be the real Rampage.
You know, when you said that, like, a Rampage, like, jumps in and gets the plot going, this isn't what I expected, because this isn't... And this doesn't have anything to do with the plot. She gets a thing moving. Like, she gets people to do actions, but, like... part of it is that I keep forgetting that, like, the Rampage in this story isn't the Rampage that I love or want. And, like, when you said that, I was expecting... I have, like, a go-to D&D character that I bring up that I play whenever I'm playing with a new GM that I don't necessarily trust.
We're getting super off track. So
okay, but anyway... So I was expecting her to walk in the door and say, "Oh, I killed a dozen people outside of the town. They looked like they were up to something." Like by gets the plot moving, I thought you meant like something relevant to the overall plot happened in the background, and Rampage just made it magnitudes worse and more urgent. Because she is a killing machine.
Well, I would make the point that there is no real plot anymore. It's just it's character interactions. This is the whole story now. So by which I mean the plot moving is that more people, like, we're dealing with people's personal internal conflicts trying to actually solve them.
So we're gonna try and remove memories, which are souls, which also power her existence.
Well, no, memories aren't souls. They're removing her memories, which are distinctly not souls. That's complicated and not worth trying to explain in the metaphysics of the story. But just keep in mind.
God, I hate this. Okay, so all right. So they gather up some blank memory orbs. How are they doing this?
So part of the plan is like, okay, they go to Lacuna for it, and Lacuna first. And the only reason why I want to bring up Lacuna in this is because I love the, like, we were talking with a friend, but I love the fact that Lacuna, it's been half a day since they got out of a burning building, and she already has a brand new like goth dress to rock, and I really love that commitment to like. The goth lifestyle that Lacuna's like, "No, I have to have a brand new, like, morning dress, or I just cannot be out today."
That's pretty good. Yeah.
it's a character.
I'm here for it.
It's an actual character trait. But Lacuna, they ask her, it's like, "Okay, well, you know, you can remove memories, right?" And she's like, "No, I've never been able to remove memories. What makes you think that?" And which I think is another, like, addressing a nitpick of the, like, story. Like, that's probably something that somebody actually asked, which is why it's so, like, it makes such an intention to actually explain how her thing works. God, there's just so much to talk about in this fucking chapter, because there's just so much shit. Sakashi comes back up because we're in chapel, and she tells us another story, which is supposed to be the theme of this particular chapter, which is, it's a story about a zebra who died trying to, like, save someone from drowning, and they like went too deep and couldn't come back up, and like the whole story is like, well, instead of making one corpse, you made two corpses by trying too hard. Fucking Charity comes back up, and we get told like, because they go to Charity's shop and she's there, and there is a bit of admittedly a funny gag where Charity's like rattling off all the things that Blackjack owes her, and Blackjack's like, wait a second, didn't I save your life? And Charity's like, rats, I thought you were gonna forget about that. Which I thought was kind of funny. But then Caprice is there. Caprice, you know, being the person that used to run Flank and almost killed Blackjack because she was, like, paranoid and all that shit. She's here now because
slept
apparently...
with her, like, several times first.
Yeah, no. Got super high with her and shit, too.
Yeah.
But she's here now because apparently she's been kicked out of Flank. Because, you know, Flank has apparently completely just been taken over as a drug den. One of her subordinates took her over because she was too weak, basically. And it's now just become a completely a raider den that focuses entirely on drug use.
But their trade relations are still strong.
Apparently. I don't know how. It's a fucking... It's a huge plot hole between two chapters, but whatever.
Unreliable narrator.
I don't know. Caprice is there, and she's all apologetic, and there's an incredibly shitty take that comes from Charity, where Caprice, Blackjack's like, well, shouldn't you be nicer to Caprice? She is helping you out, and she's like, well, I refuse to let her use pity to get her way. She's got to learn how to do things the honest businessman way, and that is incredibly awful. We could spend an entire episode just talking about this interaction. That
when you could just do one good Ayn Rand impression.
But I don't want to talk about it for too long because we're already running long. But I just hate that what is essentially the platonic ideal businesswoman in this story spouts off the line of you gotta earn your mercantile sense. And your ability to be businesslike, and it's like, that's not how anything works, but sure, whatever.
Also, aren't you a small child?
Yes, aren't you also a baby? But we also find out that she doesn't like Scotch, because Scotch has been, coming in and telling about how to fix things, and Charity's like, well, that's bullshit, she's not a crusader, she has no business dealing with this, she has her dad, which just basically boils down to, you're jealous of the fact that Scotch isn't an orphan and you are. But none of that matters because a building collapses. Or, no, so I'm really confused about this scene, but, something happens where a child gets, trapped in a storm drain of some kind that, collapses. And there's a whole dramatic scene where Blackjack is, digging through the sewage to save this drowning child that is just absolute god-awful nonsense. Because she... It's an ironic echo to the story that got told, that she's desperately trying to save this child and it almost kills her doing it, and her friends have to drag her out of the muck, kicking and screaming, trying to save this child. And then fucking Charity again shows up and she just fucking delivers the worst take, where she's like, Blackjack, you don't you're gonna kill yourself and you're gonna drag everybody with you, and it's your selfishness that keeps you going because you don't care about yourself and you want to hurt, you're going to hurt everybody else around you, which is, I guess good advice, but, why is this 8-year-old telling us that, she's just a weird mouthpiece for the author right now, and it's so fucking forced. But also we're immediately told that this isn't Blackjack's fault, because the actual fault of it was, improper building codes, basically, because the drain was built wrong, and it basically got somebody killed through ignorance on construction, proper construction and maintenance, because Scotch is just you just killed this person basically by your own stubbornness and unwillingness to learn how to build something correctly, which is just a weird line.
I don't know. I'm kind of here for it because this is the most My Little Pony original series thing.
Someone drowning in shit is the most.
The a side character has been, like, going on a B-plot the entire episode, yelling about building codes, and lo and behold, in the third act, a disaster occurs due to poor building management, poor construction.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Dear Princess Celestia, today I learned proper building maintenance.
It's darkly hilarious. Like, I want to see, like, a sort of a Terry Gilliam kind of sketch based around, like, I want to hear, like, triumphant, like, sort of national anthem style music behind a small child, like Lisa Simpson style, like ranting, having a bombastic speech about the importance of due proper diligence and proper civil engineering.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But yeah, the scene ends with Glory claiming that she can't love Blackjack like this, because this whole chapter is really just about them dealing with their relationship. And which, you know, I mean, it's fair. Like, Glory can't, like, it's irresponsible to, like, invest yourself in another person who is so self-destructive like Blackjack is. And this is the first moment of, like, not codependence that's super cool and probably a good idea on Glory's behalf. But get ready for some whiplash, because literally the next scene... Okay, so also, for comedy purposes, it's important to remember that this entire chapter happened over the events of maybe a single day. Maybe the events of 6 hours. And Blackjack and Glory had this big defiant moment of saying, I can't love you. And then literally the next scene is them fucking.
What?
and it's especially hilarious because this gets into a really uncomfortable conversation, because Glory collars Blackjack, like she gives her like a pink like dog collar, and basically like tries to go for like the BDSM thing, establishes a really uncomfortable and unhealthy idea that every time Blackjack is going to do something, is going to focus on feeling sad about things she can't control, Glory's going to punish her in a sexual like way, essentially, which is not safe or healthy in any way. But whatever, it's consensual between these two idiots. But the thing that made me lose my mind over this is like they do this big like weird 50 Shades of Grey moment where it's like, okay, I'm gonna collar you and spank you and punish you for having bad thoughts and fix your self-destructive tendencies. But also, like, they establish their safe word in this scene, and fucking Glory's safe word is Rainbow Dash, and that made me lose my goddamn mind the first time I read it. Because it was just like, I had a moment of like, what am I doing? Where am I?
You know where you are? You're down here with me in the bunker under Zordon's lair, watching all of this on a on a CV monitor. Like,
okay, I love that. Canon accepted. We're the ones that have been bugging Blackjack this whole time.
It's our job to like note all of this shit and report it back upstairs. In the event something interesting happens, and by God,
it hasn't yet. But God, I just can't handle. God. Anyways,
also, isn't Black like? Wouldn't I? Don't I? Don't know that. I would have a really hard time imagining Blackjack is at all on board with this, because she's already being like choked by like five different leashes, like
apparently she's just into it, which I mean, okay. I can believe a bottom Blackjack. What I cannot believe though is a dommy Glory. That is a bridge too far. That completely destroys my sense.
Oh, it's because she's Rainbow Dash right now. it's another like symptom of like her brain being consumed by this weird curse. Like, it's...
Oh, that's incredible. Oh, this is the best podcast.
The fallen Glory is no more.
Hey, guys! I can't really do a good Rainbow Dash impersonation, but... Neil, dog!
God.
Lick my hoof!
Oh, God, it's so good. This shit is perfect. Oh, 10 out of 10, best game. But yeah, we got a long scene that I can skip through very quickly. Is a ridiculous scene where they get a bunch of empty memory orbs, and they're like, okay, we're gonna dump your brain, some of your brain shock into these memory orbs, and like they're like, oh, how are you gonna do that? And like Blackjack kind of just on the fly just figures out how to do memory extraction spells, and
what?
Like,
okay.
Well, no. So that's the thing, though.
Well, no, wait, no. She is one with the orb.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like, you know, we've been making this joke for fucking like weeks and weeks about she has become part orb. She has now become such an orb. She can extract memories from others like an orb. It's perfect. It's a perfect crystallization of this stupid joke. And I love it.
Within 100 years, Blackjack's hunger for memories will become so extreme that the apocalypse will take a waiting for Godot sort of vibe as this immortal creature, half cyborg, half goddess, roams the waste, consuming the minds of Pony.
Ah, it's beautiful.
None shall have a past.
Then we get
and
to talk about the only thing
a
I
past, what future can there be?
We at least get to talk about the only thing I thought was exciting about this entire chapter, where we get thrown into the memories of Shucha and Twist, who were like in a relationship, and we see their final moments together. It's this big long, like very like goofy Apocalypse Now Vietnam-y kind of vibe, where they're gonna go deal with some insurgents of zebras and God. So this scene is still stupid for different reasons, but we'll get to it. But the plan is that, like, okay, there's an entire legion of zebras that have decided to defect, and we're gonna go take our zebra liaison, negotiate with them. So that's why Shuja's along, because she's kind of like, she's one of the predator, which means she's working for the Equestria. So they go there, and like they go to like, you know, talk to the zebras, and all the zebras are weird and lifeless. This is part of a scene I have to cut, like, that I cannot talk too much about. But for some reason, there's a bunch of robo zebras here. This entire legion has all been converted over to be robots by the legate. It's part of something that'll come up later, which is the only reason why I'm really mentioning this. And the only thing that I thought was exciting about this whole thing is that like, one of the soldiers bugs out and thinks that, like, it's all a trap and shoots at Shuja and Twist because he thinks that they're, like, defectors of some kind. And the only thing about this that I like is there's a really kick-ass scene of, like, at least aesthetic, like mentally, the way it pans out to me is, of, like, Shuja, like, no-selling being, like, eating a bunch of bullets, basically, like, just taking a bunch of rounds to get up to the person that's trying to, like, that's shooting at her. And it's just kind of fun to imagine this, like, zebra Terminator just waiting for a dude to empty his entire clip on her body to, like, stop him from shooting Twist. And then just, like, snaps his neck, which I thought was fun. It's fun action movie nonsense. And we get, like, a kind of sad moment, considering how, like, we've seen these characters for so fucking long between Shuja and Twist. Their dying moments are still kind of got to me, even though, like, I don't feel like I should care about these characters. I still felt myself being affected by their deaths as they're like dying in their final moments at each other, and the Phoenix Talisman trading from one to the other because Shuja's desperately trying to bring Twist back to life using it, which is how it like jumped between both of their bodies and stole their souls and put it into the machine. And we're almost done the chapter because after they come out of that, basically like, BJ's like, okay, you could just see these fucking memories, and if they don't spark anything, they don't, I don't care, because since it was a full sensory experience, like, you know, the pain of being shot kind of fucked her up a bit, so she's a little woozy out of this. But then the last fucking scene in this chapter is her going back into the living room where a stranger is having tea with 21. And she introduces herself as Dawn, who is Morning Glory's mother. And she's like, oh, you're Blackjack. I've heard so much about you. I've come to see my daughter. And that's how like the cliffhanger ends for the chapter. Bum, bum, bum. Dawn, which is the last member of the companions from the original group. She finally shows up. Bum, bum, bum.
Nobody was alarmed by the screaming from the other room as a warlord walks in and sees, Joseph Stalin walks in and sees what appears to be the fully reanimated corpse and revivified in his youth Lenin standing in the middle of the room. And, I expecting consequences. That's silly.
We're going to deal with it next chapter. It's just this is the end of the chapter.
Dawn we need the up. Cliffhanger. Yeah, I guess it makes perfect sense. It's like welcome to the big cliffhanger moment. I can't wait to be disappointed by everything to do with this character.
I like Dawn, but I think that we'll probably have disagreements about this character. She's like one of the only like characters in the story that I think works for what she is, but we have to get there.
That's surprising.
Yeah. On the reread, we'll probably find some faults with her, but like I find that, like at least in my memory, she's one of a very small select group of characters that's like, okay, this is the thing you're about and this is what you're trying to do. I get that. And that's cool. And also you do some cool things. And like
Tune in for Fi once again being disappointed that his nostalgia does not live up to the actual text.
Since we're running long anyways, do you want to like tackle anything over the course of the chapter that we haven't really like covered?
I got nothing. No, I didn't save anything as notes. I just tore into it immediately.
Okay.
Except to say that I have like a go-to D&D character that's really fun because if a GM like refuses to give us anything to do, anything to sink our teeth into, he will create quests because his superpower is that he is too dumb for the setting.
Too dumb and fighty.
Yeah.
The secret to all good D&D is at least one person on the team should be playing a himbo at all times. It's the magic spice. That makes tabletop games fun. But I don't know, is there anything better we could be reading or consuming then?
There is, but it's tearing me apart. Like I've had this like on the top of my head as a thing that I desperately wanted to recommend for a while, but now I've forgotten it. Lancer, the RPG Lancer. Episode's running long. I'll babble about Lancer again next week, but in the meantime, the YouTube channel I was talking about earlier in the episode is Just Right. JUST space WRITE Just Right. It's a YouTube channel mainly about screenplays. And the video specifically was The Rise of the Skywalker is the most frustrating J.J. Abrams film, and it talks about that is where I got the thing that I mentioned earlier about the difference between scenes and plot. What about you?
The only thing I've really been consuming over the last week has been the System Mastery podcast, which is a podcast that goes through and deals with old and obscure and usually like very crunchy, weird tabletop games, and talks about like the things that work for them, the things that don't work for them, and they discuss a lot of like they share a lot of views I have about like general tabletop design and also like general play and how certain things don't work and how certain things do. But it's a fun podcast. They're a lot cooler and more powerful than we are, but I'm still going to recommend their podcast anyways because I think it's a fun ride. It's a good archive dump to go through. Yeah, they're fun dudes. They also have a similar podcast that's about talking about Star Wars, which is called Expounded Universe, which is also quite funny.
It's very similar to this, but with, like, professional comedians.
Yes. as opposed to like a jukebox and a small horse. But yeah, I think that's...
Well, I am a lieutenant, after all. You can't completely dismiss my credentials.
But yeah, you can find us at ThouArt5, but my Twitter is extremely not safe for work, so I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. Weird is at WeirdingtonE.
And it's a clusterfuck. It's not exactly professional Twitter, but you can reach out there. You can email me directly at WeirdingtonESQ@gmail.com. Please remember to rate us, to leave comments. It feeds the dark gods of the algorithm. We still don't have enough ratings to like on iTunes to elicit a general rating. We are yet invisible to the algorithm. If you are listening to this and you have not fed the algorithm, you're not a true fan.
You can donate to Weird's Ko-Fi page directly. We will be getting setting up a Patreon this month.
I am pretty desperate. I'm going pretty hungry. Like, I'm going to be fasting a lot this week. In addition to being sick, which is not the best combination.
No, at least you can drink a lot of water. But yeah, we will be setting up Patreon, having some dollar tiers, figuring out what we're actually going to be producing for you for bonus content for this fucking thing. The first immediate thing is going to be doing a review of the tabletop systems, and then after that, things that are nebulously attached to this, I might do short reviews, I don't know. We'll have to see what we actually tackle.
I do sure hope that this war criminal from the sky is as appealing a character as you make her out to be. Otherwise, I think this is probably going to all turn out to be a huge mistake.
Home, but I couldn't come home in the dark.